What am I supposed to say?
I've never listened to a podcast.
You're listening to Big Wheel Coaching Podcast.
You're listening to Big Wheel Coaching Podcast.
A podcast. Brian McCulloch here with Big Wheel Coaching.
Hey, you're listening to Big Wheel Coaching Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Big Wheel Coaching Podcast. I am your host, Brian McCulloch. I am the assistant to the boss, the Big Wheel herself, and that would be my lovely wife, Joy. We have four coaches here at Big Wheel Coaching. We have Brady Kiss, Leo Bugtai, Joy McCulloch, and myself. And we are very excited today. One of our favorite segments of the Big Wheel Coaching Podcast is always introducing all of our listeners to our athletes, because we just think our athletes are incredible. And I'm very, very lucky today. I have one of my athletes, Jordy Conrado. Jordy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brian. It's an honor being here today.
I am so happy to have you here today, Jordy. We've been working together for a while now, and you're a superstar, man. Obviously, I'm biased, but for everyone at home, you know, Jordy has been doing incredible at the off-season time trials, and he really did well at them last year here in Southern California. And now this year it's been getting even better, and now you're getting some more advanced time trial equipment. You're really, really getting into that discipline and honing your skill set, been doing PRs at each of the last events, and you've been doing it while holding a regular, what I would say a sizable off-season training load, doing big rides ahead of these things. So I'm really excited to introduce that to everyone and talk through that with you, because time trialing is it's an important part of bike riding, and it's a challenging and difficult portion of bike riding. And so, Jordy, maybe you should start by telling us, why time trialing? What is it that you like about it?
About time trial is I have more things in control. It's the chaos of a crit, and sometimes the road races makes me very nervous. But a time trial, I'm in control of the race. I can just go and set the pace, set the level of pain, and just go as hard as I can. So I find that that I enjoy that part, where I can test my both physical and mental toughness. And it's a way of learning how to ride a bike as well, and how to read the course and ride the course. So it's still a learning, so much to learn, and so much you are showing me how to improve. That is it's good. It's good to see that slowly we're getting improvements.
Oh, you're getting great improvements. There's no doubt about that. So, Jordy, why don't you set the table for us, for all those people that don't know you? Give us just a general background on your cycling, how you came here to Southern California and racing, and ultimately, you know, you've had a long history of riding bikes in your life. So I think a lot of people would love to hear where you got your start and how you got here, because it's maybe not the typical or what someone might expect.
Yeah, well, I started riding bikes as a cross training from running. I used to run years and years ago. Run half marathon was my favorite distance. And cycling was a way to get a good workout without that much pounding on the body, and it was easier for me to ride a bike than running for long distances. About 2000 and two or so, I get injured on my back, and went to a doctor. And the doctor said, if I keep running that much, at that point I was running races in the mountains, and that's what I love to do. He said, if you keep running this much, you're going to have to go to surgery. So that made me wonder that, well, then maybe obviously I don't want to go to surgery. That's not my profession. this is just a hobby and I should enjoy it, not just go through a surgery because of it. So I started to swim a bit more and I started riding more and then we moved to the US and I kept riding more and being introduced to some races in the East Coast. And then we moved to California, 2014. I found myself here that I could ride year round. It was incredible. The weather and how much we can ride here. And here I am, riding and racing bikes, trying to stay, fit and enjoy the journey of just the performance and improving and getting better. So I started as a cross training for running, and now I'm a full-time cyclist, if you will, because that's the only sport that I do. I used to do skiing and running, swimming, but now with age and work and family, there's only so much time. So I focus on staying healthy and riding bikes.
And where did you get your start riding bikes? I think that's as important, because you alluded to coming to America and getting really into riding bikes here. So where were you doing all this running, and where did you get your start?
That was in Spain, in Barcelona, and outside of Barcelona. That's where I used to live and where I used to train, to run and ride the bikes and go to some of the mountains there, even the Pyrenees, and doing some big days in the Pyrenees with mountain biking and road biking. And Catalonia is a great place to ride a bike as well. That's where I was introduced to the cycling and to running. Obviously I grew up in Barcelona, so I started to run there, and then I was introduced to cycling in Barcelona.
Were you ever on, did you ever do any bike racing when you were in Barcelona?
It was like centuries bike ride races. I mean, because a century here in Southern California is a race as well. I just learned that yesterday. I was racing, but not with any team, back in Spain. And okay, I did a few races. I got most of my racing here in the U.S. in New Jersey. That's where I started, and then in California.
And you've gone back for a couple of races, at least in our time together. You've gone back for a holiday and done some races back there. What's the scene like here compared to there?
Well, here it's pretty similar, I would think. In terms of the quality, in Mallorca, where I raced, in Catalonia, there's a lot of bike cyclists, a lot of racing going on throughout the year. Similar to here in Southern California, there are many ex-pros that are still racing, so the level is good. You feel safe in the group. And then the good thing is this Europe being so many countries all together, you always can get in some good races, people from different countries with different backgrounds. And it's a lot of fun to get all of that. I mean, There are some races in the Pyrenees, and there's obviously the French and Germans and Dutch. They all come to race in the Pyrenees.
And were you doing that as a part of any team, or were you solo at that time? What was that like?
No,
what was that?
I was
just solo.
Yeah, I was solo. I was solo.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so now you're on the Cannondale Capo Masters team with another gentleman that I coach. John Hatchett, and you guys are just like a little wrecking crew. You guys all just do so good at these races. And so what's that been like? So for you guys to ride as a team, I think that's a whole new dimension. And that's really since you and I've been working together is you've now been exploring. You've obviously been a super strong cyclist for a long time. And that was the love of time trialing. But now there's this, you've got this big motor and now you're kind of putting it to work for team goals. I think that's kind of a unique thing to talk through and hear more about.
Yeah, actually that's, you know, I don't get the chance to race a lot throughout the year. There's a few races that I can do. One is I like road races and stage races and John and the team, that's what we like to do. And that means that I may just have one or two A races in the season, but then all the other races have a meaning. It's not, when I was going solo, I would just go there and get a good workout without any goals or any ambition. It's just go there and just race. Now, those B or C races, if you will, they still have a purpose because it could be a good race for one of us. And it's just more fun to race as a team, knowing that there is a purpose for the team in that race. And then we can help each other. And it's a lot more fun than just going solo to many races where it's just, I just want to do this race and to get some races on my legs before my A race. This has more meaning and it makes it more fun to do than just going solo. Going solo now, I don't know if I would do it again.
Well, I'm glad you're having fun with it. That's good. I think the team environment that you guys have is good fun. You guys do a good job with it.
It is an awesome team. It is just the right amount of discipline and pressure that we feel a little bit that we need to work together. But it's not. Hey, we all have lives and jobs and family, so it's very flexible with that as well. So it's fun. So we plan some races in the year and see, trying to see who is fit and who can make it. And it's a lot of fun.
Ah, that's great. That's great. I'm so glad to hear that. So let's talk a little bit about this time trialing because we opened up with it and you've been winning the Piru TT series. And then you went down to Fiesta Island as well, which is for those listening, Jordy lives up near Pasadena. Well, are you in Glendora or I forget exactly?
I'm in Placentia.
Oh, Placentia. That's right. Okay. So you're in Placentia.
Next to Fullerton. And, yeah.
There you go. Next to Fullerton and you went down to San Diego, which is a bit of a haul to get down there for an early morning time trial. And you crushed that one as well. And so I think that's really exciting because those two courses, although they're both 20 kilometers, they're completely different. So talk us through from a time trialist perspective, 20K is not a 20K is not a 20K. What is different and unique about the Fiesta Island 20K versus the Piru 20K?
Wow. Piru is really hard in terms of pacing yourself in either power, heart rate, cadence is just so difficult compared to Fiesta. Fiesta is really flat. There are a couple of long sections that you can't just say, okay, I'm going to sit, put that cadence, that power and stay there. And you could do that for a sustained few minutes. Even if it's just 2 minutes or 3 minutes of just being there in that zone, where I looked at that and I saw Fiesta, and there is a stretch there where I was between between 45 or between 42 and 44 kilometers an hour. So it was very consistent. So it makes it hard, but it's easy in terms of that the terrain makes it a bit easier. Obviously, it's Italy in the day and there is no wind, or at least the both races that I've been there, there's no wind. In Peru is windy most of the days, and the terrain is out and back. The out is downhill with rollers, and the back is uphill with rollers. So you and I talk a lot about how to set the pace on the way out and how to set the pace coming back. So different TTs in the course and how to race them, how to start and how to finish. Right? Same distance and so different.
I don't want to give away any of your secrets because you're quite the stud time trialist. But what I would say is, when you say Fiesta Island is easier, I think what you really mean to say is Fiesta Island is more straightforward in the sense that because it's flat and because there's no major turns and because there's no wind, it's flat out effort start to finish. You get up to speed, you maintain the speed, and you try to negatively split your time, which what that means is the second half, the second 10K, should be faster or as minimally as fast as the first 10K. So you want to start fast, get faster, finish fastest, right? But you have less, it's more straightforward to do that. Whereas at Peru, it's downhill. I shouldn't say it's downhill. It's trending down rollers and on a U-turn. And then on the way back, trending upwards rollers with the last 5K, 3K, very, very challenging uphill that just takes all of your momentum. So whereas Fiesta Island is a course where you build momentum and it's all about keeping it through your effort, right? Like you said, finding that right gear, finding that right cadence, making sure that you're staying aero, keeping your head tucked. All of those things are very, very important. But when we start talking about Peru, we talk about sometimes like very early on, you know, there's a need for shifting. There's a lot of shifting that goes on there, right? And so now gear selection on the wheels become very important. And because there's climbs, maybe it's not as straightforward that the most aero wheel set, i.e. a disc on the front, on the rear and a front deep dish is the best, right? Like that's not necessarily the case, right?
That's right. I mean, shifting in Peru is shift. It's continuous shifting. I always feel that I'm on the wrong cadence for some reason. It's like, okay, shifting. Because when I find my cadence, the terrain changes. And then it's either a downhill or an uphill. So shifting again. So yeah, Peru with the terrain makes it a much tougher to and harder because of what you just said, right? On Fiesta, you can set your gear and you're going to be changing a little bit, but not a whole lot. So you can focus more on your aero position, breathing, cadence, and so on without the shifting all the time. And by the way, there's no cars. In Peru, there are cars, so you need to watch for that. So it's also a, you know, a different one. Both, but I think both are really good, by the way. They're different TTU, different terrain. I think Peru makes it very interesting to me because they learn the terrain, how to race that terrain and how to take advantage of the terrain. And it gives more opportunities for that than Fiesta.
What would you say when you
take? There are many riders. I mean, Fiesta is a lot of fun. It attracts a lot of people.
Well, it's in San Diego, and there's a lot of folks there in San Diego. There's a lot of tri community there. There's a lot of folks that, that will come out there just for a good hard workout. But in Piru, that's really the select people that, that are pursuing the SoCal TT series that are making that their pilgrimage. And so when you talked about terrain and reading the terrain, we've talked a lot about that in the coaching because, of course, we talk about, well, it's based on the wind. Right. So are you going to attack the way out and then just try to return quickly? Because all of a sudden negative split is much harder to do because you're trending downhill on the way out for Piru and then trending uphill on the way back. So all of a sudden our metric and our focus changes because it's not necessarily a negative split. It's like get to the turnaround as fast as you can with as much in the tank and then empty the tank on the way back, essentially. Right. And so I think with you, it's really important for you to share with everybody what you think about that terrain, because the terrain maybe doesn't change, but how the wind affects the terrain certainly does. Sometimes it's headwind out, tailwind back. Sometimes it's tailwind out headwind out, tailwind back. Right. I mean, it switches, and sometimes it can switch during the event. Right. So the terrain is both important, but how the wind and the weather changes and influences how you attack that terrain. I think that's worth talking through because some of the people that listening that, that are interested in getting into time trialing, they need to know that that's an important thing. And how do you attack those things? Because I think that can help them think about how they might attack those things.
Right, right. So one of the things that Piru I try to do is keep the speed and the momentum. So because of the rollers that continues there is how to make sure that I don't get to the top of one of the rollers without speed, without enough speed, and trying to get the wind with this. So coming back that there is many times just headwind coming back, really, I try not to stand up on the bike, although I like, I do climb and I always like standing type of contador, if you will. Obviously I don't do it anyway close to him, but I like standing. But with the wind coming to you on the way back is the opposite, is try to stay as aero as possible, as smooth as possible. And try to get through the wind, being very, very smooth and aero. So it's the time to focus more on aero and your position, versus on the way out, that if you have tailwind, it's more about getting more speed, as much speed as you can, because you have that wind pushing you and trying to make sure at the top of those rollers, I'm not losing any of that speed that I win or I get through the wind. That's how I see it. On the way back when wind is a long way back. So we need to save a little bit of something, because if on the way out I go too hard, and if it's windy, I know the way back I'm going to really, really suffer. So I need to, the negative split has to be in place, because the way back is going to be really, really hard and long when there is wind coming. So.
And how do you look, does that change your equipment setup or anything like that? I know that you've been experimenting with some different wheels and this, that, the other for different conditions, but does the wind change that either at Fiesta Island or Piru? What are you doing at each of those? What are you doing equipment-wise?
Yeah, well, at Piru, my best time was not with a disc wheel. And it wasn't really windy, but it's just the terrain and a little bit of the wind that it may just not help a disc wheel. And that's where I had my best time. So it, To me, if it's windy, really windy, I rather go for safety and not to compromise for any speed that I may get. So if it's windy, I don't put a disc or maybe at the front I have a low rim instead of getting a deep rim wheel on the front. Fiesta, the two races I've been has never been a problem. The wind, I guess it's early in the morning. It starts at 7, and there's no wind. Maybe later in the day there's more wind from because of the location. But really in the morning, there's no wind. Wind is not a problem both days that I've been there, and you can put all the equipment that you have to go as smooth and fast as you can.
Nice. Okay. Well, what? Let's talk through the equipment a little more from the standpoint of not just wheels, but frame, because I think a lot of people, when they think about time trialing, can think about, well, I have to have the fastest bike, because of course, everything in our marketing these days is we're bombarded by aero this and aero that and aero, everything is aero. But something that I love about the way you've attacked this season with your time trialing and even last season was you've said, hey, this is the equipment that I have. I'm just going to do the best I can. And even if some of that equipment is dated, or if my fitness isn't where I need to be, or maybe if my, you know, I had a busy week at work, you're still going and you're still putting in the time because you're wanting to learn from that experience no matter what. And each time you keep getting better, even if, like you said, you don't have legs that you tapered for that event for. And I think people need to hear that, because that's very unique and it's very important. I think it's relative important for people to hear what are you riding equipment wise? And is that, you know, do you spend a lot of money on your equipment?
Well, I ride a Jamis. It's a 2012 10 speed. Jamis. But it's dated. It is a bit dated when I see the other bikes going around. But I like seeing the improvements as a result of the work that I do, and not the improvements coming out of spending money. So to me, it's more rewarding to see how I'm learning the course, how I'm improving my position, than just spending more dollars and get 10 more seconds out of that, or 5 seconds, and so on. Obviously, I look for those seconds, but if they come out of my own work and better position, reading, not necessarily going harder, but reading the terrain and the position, it's just more rewarding. I also think that the equipment has to be at the level of my skills. So I like to see improvements with my own work, and then get new equipment that's going to get me to the next level, and then improve on that, continue improving on my work before I spend more money on. I only had a disc wheel for 2 years or so. Because of that, I want to see how I'm improving, and then, yeah, I get a new piece of equipment or a new bike, and then I jump, and then I need to get better with my own position, my own cadence, my own breathing, before I spend more money on more equipment. So that's my way of taking sport in general.
I love that. I love that. I think that's so helpful for people who are possibly considering getting into time trialing, right? Because it's so intimidating when you think of, well, I have to have a special bike, right? I have to have a special bike. I need to have a special helmet, special skin suit, shoe covers, wheels, maybe even special high speed, low rolling resistance tires. Kind of all of these things come into becoming a more and more of a large factor when you're really trying to optimize your performance. Yet we've just made some simple tweaks. And like you said, you decided to invest in you, and we've done it through the training, and you've done personal bests quite a bit. And a big component of it was when we talked about the importance of adding a bike fit to your repertoire so that we knew that you were getting a lot of power out of your glutes and hamstrings. And I was not surprised, but I was pleasantly pleased with how much faster you went 1 month. Because if they have these, for those at home, they do these Pyru time trials the first Saturday or first Sunday of every month. And so you went to one, and then you got a bike fit on your TT bike and did even some special shoe and cleat placement, more of a midfoot placement, and like had a great ride that next time. And it was wonderful, right? And it was literally almost the same engine you had. I mean, because in a month's time, right, like there was a lot of stuff going on and some travel and this, that, the other. Here you are, just by moving your position, we could see how much better, just adding the experience that you brought, the fitness that you had, and now adding this other element into bike fit made a bigger jump than any of the equipment could have, right?
Absolutely. And that is, to me, much more rewarding, to see how I put my head, how just as you mentioned, the cleats, changing the position on the cleats, that gave me already some additional watts. Changing the handlebar, and we're talking about millimeters. We're not talking, I mean, that fit, I already had a bike fit on that, but it was maybe 3 years ago, 2 years ago, three. And now somebody else looking at me and saying, try this, and how about this, and look at that position, and so on. That is, to me, much more rewarding. Obviously, it's cheaper, but it's also rewarding to see that you are getting faster, not just you, as how you fight the wind and how you get more out of your power, and instead of just spending money. And I think it needs to be gradual. For somebody who wants to start in time trial, just start and start racing, even if it's not on a TT bike. You can just go and on a road bike, put some bars and get into that position. You can start practicing, and maybe in the following year you get a TT bike, and then you already have some lessons learned that you bring, and then you're going to see a big jump in time. But there's still a long way to go in improving your position before buying another bike that is faster. So if somebody would give me a Formula One, I would not be able to drive that car. I'm not skilled to that. So the TT is the same. We may get, you know, fastest TT, but if your position is wrong, it's still going to be wrong. And if your cleats, you don't get the most out of the cleats, then you're always going to be slower than your potential is.
And I would say the thing that is the correlation for everyone listening is, everyone listening to this podcast is interested in figuring out how to get more out of themselves. And the majority of people that we coach, they want to be able to get it all out. And that's what we've been working on really through the coaching. And the way we look at it at Big Wheel Coaching is to look at, well, how do we help our athletes get it all out? And it's not just a function of, well, hey, let's do these workouts and that'll help you be stronger. So here you go. Right. It's helping. It was connecting you with somebody who is reputable for bike fit, and specifically in time trial bike fit. Right. And absolutely, it's being able to work through those things and saying, well, hey, how are we going to break down our pacing? Because a fall Pyru time trial has very different wind than a winter or a spring or a summer time trial, right? Because those wind patterns shift through that valley. And so where it's important not just to look at, well, what fitness do you have? And we could just say, okay, hey, ride along at 320 watts, but it's more, there's so many more layers to it than that. And that's what I've really enjoyed working with you, Jordy, is that you want to know those layers, and we're working through them together and helping you get better at knowing when to apply them and when. And so you or how to apply them and when is better stated. So I think that's a huge, huge thing. And you're really a good example for everyone to go, hey, it's not the equipment that's making this happen. This is me being able to get more out of me. And that's why I'm coaching. That's why I'm training. That's what I'm doing all this for, so I can get more out of me. And look, I've gone to these races when I have good fitness. I've gone to these races when I haven't had great fitness. And each time I've learned, and now that I go there when I do have great fitness and good equipment, oh man, like you're just laying down the gauntlet. I mean, you won last weekend and last weekend was Piru and 2 weeks ago was Fiesta and you won both of those. So, you know, you're now to the point where you're winning on both courses, right? It's not like you're just good at one particular distance or one particular type of course. You're winning on both, which is really exciting. And I think that's just fantastic.
Thank you. I mean, I still remember the first call that you and I had about the state championships course. And we spent a long time describing how I did the previous year, how I was racing through the corners, through the little kicker in the middle, how did I take advantage of the win or not. And I remember that conversation. I took notes of that conversation. And I still read those notes to remind myself, how is this? How did it play? And so on. So being able to read the course and a previous performance with you is amazing. So you're really helping and educating me and teaching me how to read the course, how to race smarter. Besides the workouts, obviously, it's just how to get more out of the body and get more speed without necessarily through the watts. That's how to put those watts at work better.
And speaking of how to put out those watts, what do you think? Is it too soon to talk to you about 2020 goals? Do you want to share anything for the season ahead? Do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, of course. So I like stage races, and obviously if there is a TT in the stage race. And so San Dimas, since I came to Southern California, has been always my biggest race, and especially that TT, which is uphill, has nothing to do with the TT bike, but still same type of experience, which is you yourself and go hard. So San Dimas is definitely a in my priority, as well as the Tour of the Gila. I did it for the first time this past year, and it's in my list as well. Also the state championship for TT, I've been second twice, and I want to go again and try again and see if at least I can be faster than the previous years and maybe get at the top of the podium.
Refresh my memory. How close are we to the top step? I feel like it was much closer this year. Well, not I feel like I know it was, but how, what's our, you, I know you know this because this is how, this is the data guy you are. What's the gap? What do we need to overcome? What's the goal?
For what? Sorry.
For state championship TT.
For state champion TT, well, it's in the 50 minute range for that 40K. So depends on the wind. But I'm not that far. I think with a bit more better position and better turn, I could do a lot better. I could take a few more seconds there.
Yeah, and you, I was just reviewing our notes here, and you're 27 seconds off of the winner, and you were a minute and 37 seconds faster than your 2018 time. So 2018 to 2019, you went a minute 37 faster. You did a 50-43 for a 40K, which is flying. That's super fast. And then you were almost 3 minutes ahead of third place, which was awesome. So 27 seconds is what we have to overcome. And you didn't have the bike fit at that time last year. So if we kind of couple the bike fit with another year experience and the new equipment coming, you want to make any predictions for 2020?
No, I'm really bad at doing predictions, but whoever wins, I'm going to make it really pretty, very hard for that person to win. But it always depends on who else is coming, right? So it's one of those things that depends on who comes. But if I do better than last year, I mean, somebody has to put a really good time there.
Okay, so that's your time trial goals then. So state championship jersey, okay. What about, you said something about Tour of the Gila. I know that's a little bittersweet for you. That's kind of like a highlight, low light. You want to share with everyone what the Tour of the Gila is and what, you know, what is the highlight, what is the low light, all that.
Yeah, well, the Tour of the Gila is a five-day stage race where is the closest as we can get to feel what a pro race is, meaning the organization is incredible. The support, the logistics and everything is very well, well done. It's an altitude, so makes it very, very tough. Is two road races, then there is a time trial, a crit, and a final road race. So, and the three road races are very hilly. Actually, that's an understatement. They're mountains. There's no hills. It's huge mountains. The first day is flat pretty much all the way for 60 miles. And then the last 10 miles, it climbs many, many feet. And is a attrition. Just the last 10 miles is an attrition. So, it's the longest stage race that I ever done. So it's preparation means a lot, but also being there. And I remember you, the advice of don't go too hard the first day. There's another day and another day and another day. So, make sure you recover, make sure you eat, make sure you drink, and all of that. So I think all of that is much different than a 1 day or even a 3 day. Because here, after 3 days, there's still a crit, which has a little climb in the middle. And then the last day is a monster of a climb. So you need to take care of your body and water, food, recovery, not just going there and putting a lot of good efforts. And the TT is probably one of the most challenging and difficult TTs that I've ever seen. Those are not rolling hills. Those are rolling mountains that it's up there. And with the wind, is incredibly difficult, incredible. So that was both the high and the low for me last year. The high because I was there. I was fourth in the GC at the last stage. So I was just at that time, you know, who is your competitors and. You start playing games, and but I had a chance to just go for third. So I was really, really excited to just be fourth and in the GC. But then the low is because I crashed on the last stage, and I couldn't finish. So that was the low moment. Very disappointing that I just couldn't finish the. Pedals, I was all messed up with all sort of things. So, yeah, not finishing was my low, but being fourth on the last day was my high of the year. And this year I just want to go there and finish it and finish it strong.
Oh, and so I know you're going to do that, buddy. There's no doubt about
sure
that.
For sure is, yeah, for sure is one of the priorities for and goals for next year.
And I think it's really important for everyone at home to, when we talk about stage racing, some people have done them and some people have not, but you really have to perform your best every day. And when we think about the Tour of the Gila is in Silver City, New Mexico, which is about 5,000 feet, and many of the climbs go much, much higher than that. And they're very, it's a very mountainous region. There's a lot of wind and very, very stiff wind. So it makes it very, very difficult. And the pelotons of the Masters fields are full of riders that are very, very proficient, very good. And therefore, they're also, I wouldn't say small, but they're potent, right? Everybody there is there because they're a powerhouse. There's no fluff, right? Like I give you an example. Like one year I raced the Redlands Bicycle Classic and the peloton was, I think it was 208 riders. That wasn't all power. There was a little bit of fluff there. And so, you know, we would used to say this when we were racing is, you know, we would say like, you know, hey, we're going to trim the fat now. Right. And, but there's no fat to be trimmed in the Masters races at, Tour of the Gila. Everyone there deserves to be there, wants to be there, and is in the top fitness of the year. And so the fact that you're running around in fourth, that was, for me as your coach, it was a big highlight for me because I knew you could do a great ride there. And you held on to it, especially without doing any altitude training. You did such a great job of holding on to it, riding smart, not doing things you know, didn't need to do. And every day you're just less and less and less recovered because the altitude starts taking its toll on you because you're riding so hard for so long and continuously above threshold and at altitude. It just makes it so difficult to recover. And so the fact that you were riding so well, it was just sad when you had that issue and had the crash. I was devastated for you. I was devastated. But again, that's another test to your commitment and your will and your drive and also the team, because, you know, all of your teammates called me and said, hey, by the way, Jordy went down, you know, just wanted to let you know we've got him taken care of and here's what we're doing and this, that, the other. So you were well looked after. You know, and you're definitely loved on the Cannondale Capo team, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's the difference with going with a team is we look after each other and we take care of each other. And I know for the team this year is another goal. We want to be there again and do as best as we can.
I love that. Well, so that pretty much is the highlight, low light of 2019. Anything else that you're thinking? Any unfinished business for 2019? There's still, you know, we're still in October here. We could still have November and December to make 2019 even better. Anything on your list there?
No. Now is enjoy the riding in the fall and the winter in Southern California and take care of health, doing some strength training and just preparing for next year. This, by the way, there's still two Bayous left in this calendar year, which I will try to be there. But they are part of my training now. As you said earlier, I will go there no matter what. I don't taper. I think it's good being there to keep learning, learning how to race regardless of the time, regardless of whether it's my best or not. It is going there and keep learning in different conditions and being in that position. So
you're telling me two more wins still have to come here in 2020. So I like that. Okay. What about any closing thoughts? If somebody wanted to get into time trialing and they didn't have a bike, or they maybe do have a bike and it's just they have very basic skills with it or basic equipment, What would you tell somebody who's newbie who wants to get into time trialing? What would you say?
I would think first, get a bike fit. That is going to save a lot of time, not only pain, but just time and money. Get a bike fit. That will be, regardless whether it's a TT bike or just your own road bike that you want to put some bars on it and make it more aero, just get a bike fit for that particular type of riding. And spend time on in that position. I like doing, you know, I do ride the TT on a weekly basis. I really like going for the easy ride, easy workouts during the week, and spend that time on a TT to be comfortable, to just spend time with using those muscles. So I would think get a bike fit and spend time on it. Even if it's easy, that some people think that once they get in a TT, they just need to go all out. And no, you get in a TT and you can still go and you're, you know, going at the endurance pace. Just put time and being on that ride, on that position and doing those rides. Definitely a bike fit.
Definitely a bike fit. Bosco Bike Fits. He was one of our early podcast episodes. So definitely, he does a great job. There are other great bike fit guys out there as well, but and gals, because we know Lauren Molwitz, she does a great job as well. There's plenty of great folks out there. I would just say, as a coach, you know, just make sure you get somebody reputable who has some experience with it, and make sure that they look at your unique physiology and limitations, whether that's, you know, maybe something is an old injury from high school or even a car accident or just rough posture because you're sitting in front of a screen all day. You got to look at all those things, and you want to have a bike fit guru that helps you with those things and doesn't just say, oh, well, the computer says you need to be in this angle because that's most aero. Because what we're really interested in, at least from the coaching standpoint, is helping you put out all the power and get all that power out. So, yeah, I couldn't agree more. A good bike fit there, and that will help focus your training and help your training be productive. I think that's great advice, Jordy. All right. We always close these podcasts out, and I know you listen to, in fact, we were talking about before our podcast started, how much you listen to all the other podcasts and that you had some good things to say about the stretching podcast with Dr. Abel Rendon. That was cool that you liked that. We always close these out with some closing gratuity and things that we're thankful for. And I always like to let our guests lead. So in this particular case, I'll put you on the spot. Are you, what are you thankful for? What is it? I know there's something on your mind that is bringing you joy and thankfulness today.
Right. Thank you, Brian. Yes. I mean, if there is something I'm very thankful is my wife's support and being with me through many years, and how she helping just keep the balance of life, work, sports. When we met, I was already running marathons, and she will be with me. And now with the bicycle, she comes sometimes when I ask her that I need her to be with me. And she came to Gila last time in May to help in the feeds and so on. So not only the support during the races, but overall in day after day, the flexibility and being together. So I'm very thankful of that. And I think that we as we get into the sports that requires many hours and flexibility with other activities, is key to have the partner or spouse support and aligned with that to avoid problems, family problems and things like that. So I'm very thankful for that. I think I'm very, very lucky.
Well, you are very lucky. Your wife is lovely. She is extremely supportive of you. And I know it was wonderful to have her at the Tour of the Gila and numerous other events. And she's just a big fan of yours. And And I think what's important is that you're also a big fan of herders. So that's pretty exciting stuff. So good one. And you know, when I think about things that I'm thankful for, it's the same. I'm gonna follow your lead, Jordy, because hey, you're a great man, and I feel like if I could be more like you every day, I'm gonna be doing okay in life. So I would also say that I'm very lucky for a lovely, lovely wife who supports me. I'm not always the easiest person to get along with because I'm very, very focused and very, very driven, and sometimes that's not always something that serves me. So I'm thankful for Joy, who tolerates all my hey, we should do this and we should do that. And oh, hey, I'm going to do this and we're going to make this happen and let's do this. So yeah, I think family support is so important. Mm-hmm. So thank you for helping me recognize that, Jordy. You know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do another one of those family hugs that we talked about on one of our podcasts with Patrick Silva from Silva and Silva Law. He had helped us with this idea of family hugs. So I'm going to demonstrate my thankfulness by giving Seamus and Joy a family hug later. So thank you for that reminder.
Awesome.
So for all, yeah. So for everyone at home, thanks so much for joining us for another great edition of the Big Wheel Coaching Podcast. Jordy, I cannot thank you enough for you being here, this and sharing with everybody your passion for time trialing, giving some people some tips, doing some things like just really getting granular with everyone about why you do what you do and how you've been able to be so successful with it and maintain that success over all the years. So I'm really thankful to be a part of your journey and to help you and support you and to coach you and work with you. It's just an absolute privilege. Thank you for your time, Jordy. I appreciate it so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. It's an honor to actually be in one of your podcasts. I hope if somebody gets just a little bit from my journey, it will make me very happy. I very, very, very much enjoyed not only the podcast, but also working with you and you helping me on staying focused, healthy, and do well. So thank you very much.
Well, you're more than welcome, brother. I get so much out of it. So, well, thank you everyone for listening. And Jordy, do you have any closing thoughts? Anything you want to say? Any more? Anything else you want to close out with before we finish up?
No. Everyone, stay safe and prepare now for next year, and enjoy the ride.
Enjoy the ride and make 2020 great, right? Like that's what we want to see. Everyone dreaming big. This is the time to dream and look at goals and think of what 2020 can be. And you and I were talking about what your 2020 can look like before this podcast started. And I'm very excited to continue that conversation with you and all of our other athletes. So thank you everyone for listening. Know that we appreciate it so much. And we're here to help you with 2020. Also, if any of you ordered, I should couple of housekeeping items. If anyone ordered VR7 clothing, that should be being delivered at or at the very beginning of November. So just FYI, as soon as I have a date on that, I will send that out. Also, if you're looking for any great Pedal Industries stuff, we have a Big Wheel Coaching collection with them. There's a cool race day bag as well as some other unique Big Wheel Coaching items. So cool. Thank you very much, Jordy. Thank you everyone for listening. Check out that Pedal Industries store. Hope to see everyone rocking some cool VR7 Big Wheel Coaching stuff, and otherwise ride with you all very soon. Make it a great day.